Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to live and retire in Madrid, Spain? Well, I always wanted to know, and today we're going to find that answer out. We have our guest, Renato Padilla. Renato is a Bolivian entrepreneur who currently resides in Madrid. He has a passion for languages and has found a way to make money from it. In addition to be multilingual, he also has a fondness for the arts, particularly pottery and music. He played in the orchestra of his city in Bolivia and Spain for approximately 5 years. Renato was born in Japan, then moved to Bolivia, where he studied until he was 16 years old. He finished his high school education in Logroño, Spain, and in 2022, he moved to Madrid to start his own Spanish school. Unfortunately, he was scammed and the business failed. But instead of giving up, he kept trying, and now he is the principal of his own school in the center of Madrid. Renato enjoys traveling around the world and is planning to retire at the young age of 25, if everything goes according to plan. Yes, I said 25. So let me tell you a little short story. When I originally met Renato online, I kind of like looked at him and said, are you sure that you know the topic of this conversation, of this podcast? This is Where Do Gays Retire? And his response to me was, well, I'm going to retire, you know, but I said, Renato, you're not like you're in your 60s. He goes, what do I have to wait for my 60s? Why can't I retire when I was 25? And I was like, oh my God, you have a point. So anyway, Renato, in my opinion, is brilliant. And he comes here with quite a bit of knowledge about Madrid. We're going to take it away. Renato, thank you so much for joining the podcast. And tell the audience why you chose Madrid as a city in Spain, and tell us a little bit about your background. It's kind of, it's so interesting.
First of all, hello, Mark, and hello, the audience. I think you already said a lot about my background. I define myself as the result of globalization. My parents decided to move to Japan when they were in their 20s. They were 22, 23, and as soon as they got married, they knew that Bolivia was not for them, so they went to Japan. They didn't know the language, they didn't know anything, and my mother, fortunately, spoke English because she did high school in the U.S. Thanks to the English she knew, they could get a job, and they did well for 20 years that they were living in Japan, and at that time, I was born there, but the more they were in Japan, the more they realized they didn't want me to be in Japan. So they sent me to live in Bolivia with my grandmother. So I grew up with my grandma and my nanny. Then my sister came, and it was the both of us, while my parents were still in Japan until I was 11, 12, and then they moved back to Bolivia.
Okay, so they joined you in Bolivia.
Yeah, so
those years.
In that period during my childhood, I was only with my grandma, my sister, my nanny, and they arrived to Bolivia again to be part of my life until I was 16. And at that time I did principally school and music with the Philharmonic, the Symphonic. I played clarinet, flute. I also did some opera. So I like arts in general.
Wow, you're amazing. So How did you get from Bolivia, and what age? How did you get from Bolivia to Spain? So you went to school?
Yeah, I was 16. I was about to do my junior and senior in the American system, but in Spain it's called bachillerato, which are my last 2 years of high school education before university. So I arrived just in that point of my life. It was kind of different than what I expected, because I think we tend to idealize the first world coming from Bolivia. Then I realized that we were not doing that bad in the third world, because I studied in a religious school, a private religious school, so the level was kind of high for the Bolivian standards. And when I came here, I realized that it was high even in Spain. So I did the law of the minimum effort. So if I can get a 9 without studying, and I can use my time to do something more interesting, why should I aim to have a 10 out of 10? It's just 1 point of difference. So I lived like that. I still live like that. And I like it. I cannot say that it disappointed me.
So did you go to university?
No. In my case, I did something very specific. It's called Spanish as a foreign language. So in the Spanish system, you can do something that is called un grado, university. And it takes about 4 years. And then you can do a master, which takes another 1 to 2 years. And that's like the minimum people expect from you to have, the degree plus the master. In my case, I knew for sure that I wanted to be a Spanish teacher. I already spoke 8 languages.
Plus. 8, you said? 8 languages. Can you tell us what languages?
Yes, I was born in Japan. I was born in Japan, and my parents spoke to me in Japanese in my childhood, fortunately, on Skype. And then when they arrived in Bolivia, we all speak Spanish, but we also have some native languages in the country. I speak only one of the 3 that are the most spoken. It's called Guarani. It's also the official language of Paraguay. Like 96% of Paraguay population are bilingual in this language. So it's quite an important language in South America.
Paraguay, not Uruguay, right?
No, Paraguay, yeah.
Paraguay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I come also from a city, Santa Cruz de la Sierra, that is next to Brazil. So we have a huge amount of Brazilian people living among us. And I've also been to Brazil quite a few times, and that's why I speak Portuguese. My husband is French. He's actually a French teacher, and he speaks also quite a few languages, and that's why I speak French. Because, not because of him, because he speaks Spanish perfectly, but because of his family, because they don't speak any language. So I had to learn French to communicate with them. And German, I was dating a German guy for like a period, and then I learned German with him. Then I was dating this English guy when I was living in Logroño at the beginning, and I learned English with him way, way better. I spoke before, because before I spoke English, but then it got better. And I speak Italian because I love Italy, and quite easy for me to learn languages, so why not? And not Italian. And then in high school, I also studied ancient Greek and Latin, which are extremely important for etymology and everything related to the Latin languages. So Spanish, French, Italian, Romanian, all of them are related thanks to Latin and Greek.
Wow. That's incredible. I have trouble learning English, and I'm from the U.S., and here you are, 22 years old and knows 8 languages. It's pretty incredible. So that's That's definitely incredible. Let's talk about Madrid. Why did you choose Madrid as a city in Spain to settle down and live?
So the languages is actually the answer to that question, because Madrid has an amazing expat community. It's full of people from all around the world. And there is a characteristic in Madrid that is quite beneficial for me, that is that Spaniards don't speak English. If you in the audience want to move to Madrid, don't expect them to speak in English. They won't. So half of the world speaks Spanish. So they think like, why if half of the world speak my language, should I learn anything else?
Right.
So yeah, the same that probably American people think like half of the world speaks English, why should I learn? The same is
same thing.
Same thing. And yeah.
So you saw like in the back of your mind at that time, you saw an opportunity.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, I can teach you
Spanish. Yeah.
Spanish.
Spanish. Yeah.
Spanish to English people.
Yeah. Actually, not only English, like any language they speak. I don't really mind.
Any language.
I have students from Korea, from Turkey, from Vietnam, so many countries. Even from Kazakhstan, countries that you might never spoke, never heard about, or even Turkmenistan, this kind of very few mentioned countries, like you barely hear about it. Azerbaijan, it's very nice.
So that means, so people from all these countries are, you know, that decide to move to Madrid, you have to know. Well, you know Spanish, but you kind of have to know their language too to get them to understand what you're talking about. And I'm sure you have, now you have people working for you,
yes.
Right? That
yes.
Teach
now,
different.
Now I'm not teaching anymore. I'm just managing the business. I recently went to Bolivia for a whole month and I managed everything online. So that's part of my retirement plan. Yeah, I mean, my teachers, one of them is from Costa Rica. He speaks Spanish, English, French, Portuguese. The other one from Madrid, she speaks Spanish and English. The other one from Bolivia, actually, he speaks Spanish, English, and Arab. He's bilingual in Arab, which is quite interesting for the business. Then I have another one who is bilingual, Spanish, Italian. But she also speaks English and French. So, yeah, I have a good staff.
That's incredible. Okay. So, tell us geographically, where is Madrid located within Spain? And where is the center city? And so, Madrid is not on the coast. It's kind of like in the middle. Tell us a little bit about the geography.
Yeah. So, Madrid is, as I said, right in the middle. We have something called kilometer zero, the kilometer zero, in which all the roads of Madrid converge. And it is 100 meters from my business, which is nice because it's the center of the city. So the center, you can divide it in a few areas. One of them is Sol, which is the center of the center. Then you have, according to what you like, you have, for example, Chueca, which is the gay neighborhood. You have Salamanca and Malasaña especially, which is the posh neighborhood. Then you have Retiro, nearby to the Retiro Park, which is also very expensive, very posh, and yeah, one of the most expensive areas of the city, actually. Then you have other areas like La Latina that are more alternative. So if you like this alternative scene, like the secondhand market, restaurants from Latin America, restaurants from Africa. That's a nice neighborhood for that. And that's it. So that's like the little amount of the center.
Okay. And so there's no beaches around Madrid. So you'd have to travel hours to get to a beach, right?
I mean, hours. You can go to Valencia. You could be there in like an hour and a half, maybe.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, bullet train or speed train.
Yeah, the bullet
train. The fast
train. Yeah, the fast train.
Oh, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that too.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us about the climate. What's the climate like in Madrid? I know Madrid, would it be on the same longitude as, like, I'm trying to think, is it Canada or New York? I'm not sure, but because they have seasons.
Might be New York. I'm not totally sure, but it is for sure something different than what I'm used to, because I come literally from next to the Amazon. If I drive from my house in Bolivia, I can just arrive to the Amazon in like 10 hours, maybe 12. But Madrid is the opposite. If I'm used to the humidity, Madrid is extremely dry.
Okay, but Madrid also has four seasons, correct?
Yes, you have the four seasons.
So it does get cold.
And they are very well marked. Like you feel them.
That's nice. I like four seasons. So the trees change the color of the leaves in the fall.
Yes.
The spring, everything is growing.
Yeah, that's exactly...
And the winter is freezing. Does it snow?
It's freezing. And the last snowstorm we had was like 2 or 3 years ago. It paralyzed the city. People didn't go to work. They go to school. They stopped working, living. It was awful. I think Madrid was not prepared for that snowstorm. It was called Filomena.
Yeah, it was different, a phenomena. Huh? Do you have a rainy season? Does it get in the spring, maybe? Does it rain?
Actually, now it's kind of rainy.
In the winter?
Yeah.
Okay. If it doesn't snow, which usually it doesn't snow, but
now
rains.
It's not snowing. This current year, it hasn't been snowing, but it rains.
Okay. How cold do you think... Do you know? I don't know if you know Fahrenheit as far as centigrade or Celsius.
I don't know Celsius.
Do you know how cold does it get in the winter?
Okay, so I'll tell you now in Fahrenheit. So in Fahrenheit, this is still Celsius. It could be -5 degrees, like the most freezing, -5, but usually it stays in 0 degrees.
It's still cold.
Yeah, but during the winter. And as I said, because of how dry the city is, I feel it way less cold than I would feel it probably in my country. It's 20 degrees. I'm dying. I'm freezing.
In here,
20 degrees is perfect.
Not that bad.
No, it's really okay.
Okay. It's like here in the desert. I live in Phoenix, Arizona. It's in the desert, so it's very dry. The winter, when it gets down to at night, either 40s or 30s Fahrenheit, it's freezing. To me, it's freezing. But to anybody
else.
Yeah,
the problem, I think the problem in Madrid is the summer, because there's no beach, there's no nothing.
So it gets hot.
People, because of how dry it is, that you're in a sauna. So even if it's like 35, Celsius degrees, you feel it like 45 because it's so dry.
Yeah, you just want to like go into a swimming pool.
Yeah, and the swimming pools are full.
Yeah, I bet. Okay. Is living in an LGBTQ neighborhood important to you? And does Madrid have those type of neighborhoods or gayborhoods, as we call it in the US?
Yes, actually, I think the whole Madrid is very gay, starting from that. Like, you see the LGBT representation everywhere. And the gay neighborhood by excellence is Chueca. And me personally, I wouldn't live there. It's even way too much for me. And also because of the gentrification, there's just a few people that could afford living in Chueca.
Oh, so the gays came in and gentrified the neighborhood and drove all the prices up.
I think that's because the landlords realized, okay, we have these gay men that are in their 40s. They have no children, but if they are in their 40s, it means that they are professionally well-developed, good salaries, no children because they are gay, and they have nothing better to spend their money than paying these landlords stupid quantities of money for their very old flats that are not worth what they ask for. But as people keep paying, they keep rising the price.
Right, exactly. I hear you. Okay. So the gayborhoods exist, but you wouldn't particularly like to live there. That's fine. Do they have lots of gay bars?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And are there gay restaurants?
I don't think there's
Or just gay bars that have
gay
food.
Gay bars, yeah, exactly. Gay bars that there's some food. That's exactly how.
Okay. And are they usually in one area, or are they spread out within Madrid all over?
No, they are in Chueca.
In the gay neighborhood.
They are in the gay neighborhood.
Okay. All right. So how easy or difficult would it be to make friends in the gay community, in the queer community?
I think it depends on how extrovert you are and how well you connect with other people. In my case, I am extremely extrovert and I have lots of friends, and the gay friends I have, I didn't even know that they were gay because I'm very oblivious. I mean, we are not friends because we are gay. We are friends because we are nice people that like other nice people. In my case, especially, I don't really need or feel as much contact with the gay community. I do participate in some activities or I try to, for example, have in my space to let people know some gay flag or something, like it's a LGBT-friendly space. So I actively, but also under the table, like I do my stuff to help the gay community in my way, in what I can do. But I don't actively go to a gay space to look for friends because it's kind of difficult because they usually are here for a period, or most of them are here just for Erasmus,
for visiting.
So it doesn't really make a lot of sense for me to invest lots of time and energy making friends that I know that will be back in their countries within a year, within 2 years, because I cannot see these long-term friendships going on. So I want my relationships, friendship, any kind of human relationship to be long-term. And if I cannot do it, then it's like meh.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Friendships, I agree. You invest time in friendships, I think that they should be intended for long-term and not short term. So I totally agree. And the thing is, probably in Spain, and just thinking about it, that it may not make a difference like it may in the United States, because there's a lot of stuff going on in the United States, let's say, that makes one uncomfortable sometimes being around non-queer folk or gay folk, LGBT folk. Whereas in Spain, it doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah. I think you expressed my point perfectly. Like, maybe in the States, you have these religious funny, which probably if it's not a gay bar, it may happen that if I kiss my husband, there is this crazy Karen yelling at me, like, why do you do that in front of a child?
Exactly.
And in Madrid, it doesn't happen. So I don't need to seek for a safe space, because Madrid is itself
a safe
space. So maybe that's why I don't feel the need to be in the gay community, as I see Madrid as an extremely gay friendly.
Wow, that is refreshing. It totally is. It makes such a big difference too in the way you live day to day. So
yeah, because even the fact that I don't need to think about where I'm going or what should I do, but just
be yourself, and it doesn't matter.
One less thing to think about.
You're right. You're right. Well, you're a smart guy. So let's talk a little bit about, is speaking Spanish a must? Since this is your, you know, this is your field. If I wanted to live or retire in Madrid, would I find it difficult? Let's say I didn't know Spanish, or I had minimal Spanish, because I would think before even leaving for Spain, I would try my best to learn a little bit. But that's where your teaching comes in. Do I need Spanish? So in other words, if I speak English, are there other English speaking people that I can get by a little bit? Or do I really need to take your class?
The international community is huge, but then I think there's this decisive factor, which is, do you only want to belong to this apart expats community living another life in Madrid? So you put yourself in this kind of expat apartheid, or do you want to live the real experience, living in Spain, having contact with other Spaniards, visiting little villages in the middle of nowhere, and having a chat with this 90 years old grandma that could tell you how she survived the dictatorship of Franquism in Spain? So I think there would be like so many things that you would be
missing
that I think it's worth it to learn the language at your own path. I mean, I have students that they speak fluently after 3 months, some others after 6, some others take maybe a year to speak fluently. So each person is totally different, and our background is totally different. So
do you get people older like me?
Yes, I had students in their 68, 62, 58, 55.
Do you find it's more difficult for them to pick up the language at an older age?
Actually, they were all European or Middle East, which means that they speak at least 2 or 3 languages. So,
okay. So it's not that hard.
So they were not American. Yeah.
Okay. And yeah. I think the Americans would have a problem.
So there was an American one. He was from New York. I don't say the name.
That's where I was from.
Yeah. So I don't say names or anything, but so mm-hmm. he was about 72. Not that old. He was still in shape. And He spoke also Turkish because he was the first generation. His parents moved from Turkey to from Istanbul specifically to New York to start the start this American dream thing. And they spoke to him in Turkish. So this guy was bilingual in English and Turkish. And even if he was American, I think he had a huge advantage. But by the fact of being able to think in a different way linguistically.
That's impressive. I envy you. My God, 8 languages. Oof. I'm telling you, I can't even get my English down, Pat. Okay, so I can get by. Most people don't really speak English, and knowing the language really helps. And it also helps because without learning Spanish, you're really missing out on a lot of the culture and society. You're limiting yourself. You just want to, you know, if you just want to know English and just live with the expats, that's fine, but you really want
to. Totally fine. I have some students in my school that have joined the lessons from A1, the basic level. And mm-hmm. I'm like, why did you decide to start Spanish? And they were like, oh, because one of our close friends who is one of your students. And I was like, who? And then they told me, ah, this guy. He was like, oh, nice. And we saw that in 2 years, now he speaks amazingly well, like in upper intermediate. And he's 56. So he's almost 60. And within 2 years, he learned extremely fast. And they are like, and we have been living here for 7 years, and we don't speak Spanish, like barely. Hola, ¿qué tal? Bien, me llamo Pepe, something like that. As they saw that someone closer to their age from the same city, from the same country, from the same background, learned the language, they are like, okay, it encourages us and we stay behind because this is, and I'm like, yeah, you know, this is not a competition. And they're like, yes, but if he can, then I can.
Cool. That's great. So tell us, Renato, what's the local economy like? Like if people want to buy a 2-bedroom, 2-bath house or condo or something like that, what would they be paying? And what would they be paying to rent also, like a 2-bedroom?
To rent? I don't think it's even worth it to rent, because if you calculate how much you're going to pay in rent,
it's high.
It's very high. All the prices I can give you are in the center of Madrid, but a 2-bedroom apartment would be around 1,800 to 2,000
euros.
Yeah, 2,000 euros, which is 1.10, I think, with dollar. So dollars, it would be like $2,200.
And that's for 2-bedroom or 1-bedroom?
2-bedroom.
Yeah, we're talking, I mean, U.S. prices.
Yeah, you're talking U.S. prices in a country in which the minimum salary
per month
is
much lower.
Is 1,300. So now you need to take into account that you're speaking with people that are making 15K a year.
So how do they do it? How do they live there? They don't live there.
I don't know.
They can't live there.
They live with their parents until they are 35, maybe 40.
It's kind of sad the way. Yeah, because you know what? All the expats come in, drive the prices up. Or buy and rent them out as Airbnbs.
Yeah, actually, lots of Chinese companies are doing that right now. They buy literally a whole building.
That's why they probably will crack down on the Golden Visa, which allows you to purchase a property, I believe, in Spain for
half
a million dollars.
Half euros. A million dollars.
Euros. Okay.
Which is around 550 approximately.
US, yeah. Hey, you're good at that conversion stuff.
It's only adding 10%. So.
But you're good. You're good. Okay, so that was like a rental that you gave us an idea. How about to purchase? Any 400,000 euro, 500, you know, you have any?
I would say between 4 and 6. Or 400 to 600 to buy a nice apartment. I mean, it's like if you're coming from another continent, please don't buy a shitty hole in the middle of nowhere. You come here to get a better life, not to make it worse. So if you're trying to buy a nice property, I would say it would be around 400 to 600.
Okay. That's up there too in price. How about electric bills and utilities, electric and gas? I know fuel gas is expensive in Spain and in Europe.
Yeah.
But how about electric and gas for the home?
I think I pay around 60 euros a month in electricity. And gas, it could be around 80.
It's more.
Yeah, okay, gas is expensive now because of the war with Russia.
The war. Yeah, that's what I just, in fact, just got off with my Amsterdam interview. And they said that gas prices have gone up because they used to get their gas from Russia.
Yes, very cheap.
Yes, very cheap. And now that there's the war in Ukraine, they're not getting the gas from Russia, or it's more expensive.
No, they're just not getting it because the European Union decided to ban anything that comes from Russia. And it would be a little bit,
hypocritical
from them to ban Russia, everything except the gas.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Okay, and how about water bills?
I think we don't pay them. I mean, as a tenant, I think I don't.
They're
pay
included water. In the rent.
Yeah, it's included.
Okay.
But it shouldn't be that much. I mean, I know my mother lives in a 3-bedroom apartment in Logroño, a city in northern Spain. She pays every 6 months, like 150 in water.
In water, okay. And taxes are expensive, right?
Because you make me cry every time you remind me.
So taxes are high because you get stuff, you get things for your tax money, right? So
You have an amazing public system education. You have an amazing public health system. So we get very, very good things. I think it's even the best in Europe that we have in Spain, the best health system.
I wouldn't doubt it. I really wouldn't doubt it. And we'll get to that. We'll get to healthcare in just a few moments, but does Madrid have an arts and culture scene? Like, do they have live theater, museums? Oh, I know they have museums.
Yeah, a lot of theaters, a lot of museums, a lot of drag queen scene as well.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Madrid?
Yeah.
Cool. They don't ban drag queens then?
No, this is not Texas.
Not like Texas or Florida. Yeah. I shouldn't say that, but okay.
Yeah, I remembered once when I was in my high school, my first year, which was my junior year, and then it happened this Texas massive shooting going on,
mm-hmm.
and instead of banning the during the same week they banned drag queens.
Right.
And the teacher's assistant, who was from Texas, was like, I don't know how to answer, because we were 16, 17 years old, and was like, what is going on in your country? Like, why, if you have problems, instead of solving, they ban the drag queens? Like, what is wrong with the drag queens?
Yep, that's what we keep on asking. And yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, those are things that I think that shock anybody who is not from the U.S.
Or
is not familiar with the U.S. Mm-hmm. Because we don't have guns, we don't have weapons, we don't have anything. Maybe you could kill someone with a toothpick or something like that.
Right. We'll get to that too. But as far as arts and culture, you have movies, you have theater, live theater, you have opera, you have basically everything at your disposal.
And available also in English.
Available in English. Oh, that's interesting. Can go to a movie in English?
Yeah, every time I go to watch a movie, I watch them in original language. It doesn't matter if it's Italian, English, Russian, whatever, because they project them in the original language. There are like two cinemas that project the movies in original language.
Wow.
And one is 2 minutes away from my house, so it's perfect.
That's great. Okay.
And for the theaters, right now we have the Book of Mormon also in English.
You have
the
what?
Musical. The Book of Mormon.
Book of Mormon?
The cool. Musical, also available in English.
Wow. And that's live theater?
Yes, sure.
Oh, wow. So you could see live theater in English. Whew.
I mean, it's in Spanish, but you can see the subtitles.
Okay.
There are huge
screens
where it translates everything going on. Also in the opera, if you go to see Suela, that is a kind of Spanish opera, you also have access to the English translation of everything going on.
See, I always wondered about that. You just answered my question, because I said, you know what, if I move to Spain and I'm really, you know, I'm trying to learn the language and I really don't know the language that well, and I wanted to see like a off-Broadway show like Book of Mormon, how would I understand what they're saying, you know?
Yes, and you will. They realized a long time ago that lots of the public that they get is not from Madrid, so they had to solve it.
Got it. So when I was in Spain in 1982, they had bullfights. Is that still something that they have?
Yes, it still exists in Spain. But I think it's like the white elephant. White elephant. We just ignore it.
Because people really don't like
killing
bulls. And
no.
Yeah.
We like eating bulls. I mean, they taste. I love it. I mean, the bull meat, I like it, but I try not to think about the process.
Right. Okay. All right. So getting into food, are you like a foodie? I'm sure Madrid has wonderful, wonderful restaurants. Tell us a little bit about that. Can you get any type of food, any type of cuisine in Madrid?
Literally any. Yeah, my favorite ones are the Japanese, the Italian, the French cuisine. And also there's a lot of Ethiopian, not only Ethiopian, but from lots of different
Africa.
Senegal, Zimbabwe, a lot of Moroccan restaurants. There are two really, really good and authentic Turkish restaurants. There's also a Korean one. I don't really like the Korean style, but I have been to them. They are authentic. So I authenticate on my Korean food. It's a reality. It's
how about Spanish food? I remember when I was in Madrid, I remember, and it's so long ago. 1982 is a long time.
You probably
time.
Went to Restaurante El Botín.
I don't remember where I went, but I remember walking through like old Madrid, and like there were cobblestone streets, and we were just walking to a restaurant. Now, at that time, Franco was still, Franco just got out of power.
Franco so, never got out of power. He died.
Right. Okay. So he died right before, I think, 82, like a couple of years before. And if
he died in the 75.
Okay. So when I went in 82, there was still some sort of unrest in Spain, because I remember walking through old Madrid and there were like army with green beret hat with their machine guns.
Oh, yeah.
At the door entrance while we were passing.
It was not LGBT friendly.
Right. I don't think so. I don't think it was LGBT friendly anywhere. I didn't even know if I was LGBT or if I was gay back then. I probably knew, but I didn't know what it was or whatever. Or maybe
it didn't have a name.
Right. Maybe I did. But we won't talk about that. Okay. So I could still get paella?
You can get anything. I mean, if you want a real paella, please go to Valencia.
Valencia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah. If not, you have very, very, very good restaurants that are not that expensive. I mean, you can get an amazing dinner for 30 to 40 euros per person.
I remember.
But you can also get an amazing lunch, like menú del día, the daily menu.
Yep.
For 12 to 15 euros, you can get a very, very good menú del día, which is the starter, the main dish, the drink, and the dessert for 50 euros.
That's incredible. I love that. I really like that. Oh, and I remember it was the first time. It kind of shocked me too, because in the U.S. I'm not used to this. So when I went and I ordered seafood in Madrid or wherever I was in Spain, like shrimp, the prawns, they looked back at me and they had their eyeballs in there. They still had the full fish.
Oh, wait. It's not normal to have the full fish?
Oh, no. In the U.S., you don't see like a shrimp? Huh? You don't see eyeballs on the shrimp.
Oh, that's weird. I'm so used to eat it like that.
That's what I said. When I went to Spain, I was like, they're looking at me. Why are they staring at me and they're dead?
Because they are judging you.
Yeah, they're judging me. And I'm like,
you killed me.
I don't want to eat you.
And you still eat it.
And I still ate them because
it was delicious.
It was delicious. It was. I loved it. Yeah, I remember the seafood in Spain was just really, really, really good. And now they have tapas. I don't even think tapas was invented back then when I was there.
Maybe they were invented. Let's see. I'm going to look.
I don't think so. I think that became a new thing. I don't know when that happened, in the 90s or 2000s maybe. But tapas is very, I don't know if it's, okay. Is it common in Madrid as well as in Malaga?
Okay, so it seems to be that the tapas exist in Spain since the 13th century.
Oh, okay. So it didn't come to the U.S. for a while. It wasn't popular in the U.S.
Yeah. Probably it didn't go to the U.S.
That's... And then we copied you, or somebody went to Spain and said, oh my God, this is really good. Maybe we can sell this in the U.S. Little plates. Ah.
Yeah. So, yeah, but probably you did something different, because in Spain, what we do is you go to a restaurant, you get your drink, and they serve you the tapa for free. So that's the idea of the tapa, to accompany what you are drinking. So it's normal that maybe you're not paying the real price. You're not paying the 2 euros that it values the beer, but you are paying 4 or 5 euros for the beer, but you have tapa. So nobody cares if there's an overprice in the beer or drink or whatever, because you get tapas.
So the difference is, in the U.S., you're paying for your drink and you're paying for your tapas. So,
and you're paying 20% for the...
$20 for tapas.
No, and plus 20% for tips.
Oh, yeah. 20% for tips. And again...
We don't tip in Spain. Don't tip in Spain. Like, it's not normal. Like, it doesn't happen. We don't have... And there are regulations about work, which people can arrive to the end of the month with their salary. So we don't need to obligate the client to give us tip.
So they pay their workers a proper wage to live. So they don't require the 20% tip.
Yes, exactly.
And another thing, tell me about... So let's say I'm sitting at a restaurant in Madrid, and I'm finished, and I'm waiting and waiting and waiting for my bill, for my check.
Oh, yeah.
They will never come over?
No.
Unless you ask?
You need to ask la cuenta, por favor, because it is extremely impolite to... just give you the bill, because it means that they are kicking you out of the restaurant. And what kind of bastard would kick you out of our restaurants? Like,
in the U.S., they do that all the time. So they want to turn over as many tables as possible. So they're like, oh, what can I get you? Could I get you dessert? Is that all? Here's the check. Bye-bye. It's different in the U.S.
So in the U.S., when you do the reservation of the table?
Yes.
It takes me around 15 to 20 minutes to eat. And it's extremely quickly. Maybe 30 minutes. I take as much as possible. But when you reserve on the restaurant, on the website, you know the fork.
The you app, know what?
The fork. It's an app that you use to do reservations.
Oh, okay.
It's very common in Europe. We use this app, the fork. And usually it gives you a time between an hour and a half to 2 hours. So if I want to do a reservation, for example, at 2 p.m., the app blocks that table from 2 p.m. to 3:30, even 4 p.m. because you're paying.
Okay. So the difference is, in the U.S., you make a reservation for 2 p.m., 2 p.m. is it. So let's say you get in at 2 p.m. You have your meal, and maybe by 3 you're out.
Because,
yeah, maybe.
And
maybe
when do you have time to do the chat? That, like, we go to a restaurant not to eat, but for the social.
Oh, we chat while we're eating.
So disgusting.
So yeah, we get indigestion. Everything is quick, 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 fast, fast, fast.
Which is also nice for your insurance, because you the doctors get more money, and everything is about money.
Right, everything is about money. So that's the difference. So I like to highlight that stuff because it's so interesting. I love the way the Europeans do things. Okay. We learned about restaurants. Let's talk about public transportation. I know in Spain, They have local trains. They have high-speed bullet trains that go to different cities. In fact, when I was going to go to Malaga, I was going to fly into Madrid and then take a fast train, I forget, directly to Malaga. I think they have one, either that or Valencia. I was going to go to Valencia too, and they have a train from Madrid to anywhere.
Yes, that's how it works basically. Because of our location in the map, you can go from Madrid to anywhere. That's extremely easy to arrive anywhere.
And I know there was, I forgot the name of the station. There is a specific Atocha.
Yes.
That was it. Because yes. I looked it up. I Googled it. I said, how could I get from the airport to Malaga? And they said, Atocha train goes. Yeah. That's where you got to go.
Yeah. Good news. If you are over 65, the public transportation is for free.
For free.
But when I say the public transportation, I mean only local. In the local transportation, which is still a lot, and it works amazingly well. But maybe you don't even need it because we do everything by foot.
You could walk. That's another thing I wanted to talk about.
Yeah. So
everything is walkable, right?
Yes.
So you could walk to the market and buy food.
Or.
Okay, because here is different.
Sure, I mean, I walk.
You have to take a car.
Five minutes, maybe. No, maybe less, like 3 minutes to the market.
Everything in the U.S. is car-centric. Everything is a car.
I don't even have the car license, so you can imagine.
Okay, so you could walk to the market. Can you walk to the drugstore, pharmacia?
Sure.
Can you walk to the doctor?
Yes, you can walk to
the hospital. Yeah. See, this is what I need. This is my dream of a type of place to live, because I hate to drive and there's so much traffic in the US in certain cities that it's just insane. So if I could walk, like, picture where I live, I could walk us. I live in a major, I live in a midtown, downtown area. So I could walk to just a few restaurants, maybe 1, 2, 3 restaurants. I'm lucky that I have a pharmacy in my building. I can't walk to the grocery store. I can't walk. You need a car. So... yeah.
So in my case, I don't know how to drive. I don't have a drive license. I would be very fucked up in the US.
Okay. You could walk to almost everything in Madrid. And for the things that you can't walk, you take the subway or you take the metro.
I mean, you can walk for everything. You just take the metro if you want to take that specific restaurant that you like that is extremely far.
It's far.
But it's your choice to go to the restaurant because in your neighborhood you have maybe 30, 50 restaurants. So you are just going to another neighborhood by public transportation because you want that one.
Wow. Do they have Uber?
Yes, and it's actually extremely cheap.
Uber is cheap?
Yes, we pay like €7.
Oh, wow. Wow, yeah. That's great. And you have the rest. Okay. So is there a lot of traffic? Like with the people that do drive, is there a lot of traffic in Madrid?
Yes. It's not a city that has been built for cars. By the way, I have just double checked. In Spain, restaurants, we have 10,000 restaurants in Madrid. And we have...
In Madrid alone?
In Madrid alone, we have 10,000 restaurants. And 15,000 bars.
Holy moly. That's crazy. That's like five on every block.
Actually, it's Madrid has a bar per each 200 inhabitants.
Wow. That's an amazing amount of bars. Wow. And okay. And you have buses as well as trains?
Buses, train, metro.
Yeah. Airport. How close is the airport to where you live?
I mean, if I am in a rush, I pick an Uber, and the Uber is going to charge me around 18 to 20 euros. And it will take during the night, because if I take an Uber to go to the airport, it's because it's very, maybe 2, 3 a.m. And it will take around 17 to 18 minutes.
Wow.
Maximum 20 minutes. And if it's during the day, then yes, it could take like 30 minutes.
How far is like the Atocha State train station to you?
It's 20 minutes walking from my house.
Okay. Okay.
And that if you take, for example, Sol, like which is the central point, to Atocha, it will take you probably 20 to 25 minutes to be there. In Atocha.
Wow, that's great. So if you work, is it important to live by your work or does it matter? Because there's so much train, there's so many different options for transportation.
I mean, me personally, I live 5 minutes walking from my place of work.
It's convenient.
If you can avoid living an hour by metro on your place of work, then it's better. I think it's better saves. To use, because it's an hour going, an hour back. It's 2 hours that you're wasting every day. Mm-hmm. So if you can live nearby your place of work, that's ideal. But if not, it's very easy to arrive from one point to another.
To another. Great. All right, let's get into the crime. So Madrid is a big city, and all big cities have some sort of crime. Will I feel safe if I lived in Madrid as far as I'm comparing to a city in the United States, such as Phoenix, where I live? So here in Phoenix, we allow guns, of course, and it's, I know you're going to say, why? And I don't even want to get into it because I don't have that. I mean, I have the answer, but do I agree with it? No. But anyway, so I know that guns are not allowed in the EU. Well, most parts of the EU, but in Spain, they're not allowed. Would I feel safe living in Spain? I guess there's crime of opportunity.
Pickpockets. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's quite common. If you are in the metro station, which is, by the way, they are amazing metro stations. We have
the pickpockets are?
They are beautiful metro stations. Yeah, and the pickpockets are there. But I think in Barcelona, the pickpockets are more a problem than in Madrid. I think that all my friends suffered the pickpockets in Madrid, not me. In my case, personally, I forgot my wallet with my credit card, my debit card, my DSA green card with my permission to live in Spain with my European green card. So everything. I left it in the metro. I forgot it. It was midnight.
Oh.
And someone reported that and they called me. They directly called me like, hey, by the way, here's your stuff. Could you come by the police station because someone has come with all your stuff. So please come in.
Did they take your money, your cash?
I don't have cash. I never have cash. I mean, I thought
it's very rare. Is that a common thing that somebody might turn it in if you lost it, or
no? I think
it's not the, common,
the,
right?
I think it's the common thing to return.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. In the United States, you lose your wallet, you could forget it. You're calling all your banks. Stop my debit card. Stop my credit card. You're calling your drive, you know, the MVD for the driver's license. You have to replace everything. So,
yeah. So, no. It's rare. Nobody reports.
No shootings, no mass shootings because guns are illegal.
I mean, they could knock you to steal your wallet, but it's like, it's just your wallet. If you know that you are one person against three, just to them, whatever.
I remember seeing a YouTube. There's a guy that does YouTubes that he was from New Zealand and his wife is from Spain and they live there. And I remember he was in a tapas bar or in a bar and he left his camera in a bag with all of his stuff and just put it down on the bar, and in a snap second somebody took it and stole it, and it was like over $1,000 worth or €1,000 worth.
I mean,
of
please
stuff.
Don't leave your stuff that looks like €1,000 on the table that with a cartel with a little sign that says please
steal me.
I mean, don't be steely or innocent, or I don't know how to describe it. It's like, just, if you don't expose yourself, nothing is going to happen. Just don't expose yourself.
Right. Gotcha. So, and pretty much I'll feel safe going out, walking my dog if I had to in the middle of the night.
For sure.
Really?
Yeah, I go out at 2 or 3 a.m. Like, I go to party and I go back to my place alone at 4 or 5 in the morning.
And you feel safe?
Sure.
Well, that's different than here because...
I mean, I can always scream. If something is happening, I can always scream. And there's always people around. It doesn't matter if it's 3 a.m., 2 a.m., 5 p.m. If I scream, people would help me. So.
And how about women? Like, women feel safe too, right? Walking at night?
Yes.
That's interesting. Very interesting. It's different. So we have a different mentality as far as that's concerned.
And supposedly you were a colony of the UK. So you are meant to be as European as we are.
Yeah, I don't know what went wrong. The money. Everybody's money hungry.
Happened.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about healthcare. Do you think there are enough doctors to accommodate the population in Madrid for doctors? Is there a long wait for doctors?
I have a private insurance. So in my case, I just need to call the doctor literally on like this, on a video call. I see the doctor, he sees me. I don't even need to go to the center. And if he sees that it's not as easy as, I don't know, a receipt with antibiotics or something, or just get this medicine and you'll be fine. If it's something more serious, then he would be like, okay, so come to the emergency and maybe take like 2 to 3 hours waiting, or maybe it could take 30 minutes. It depends. Or for example, if I need a specialist, probably I don't get it today, but I can get it tomorrow or next week, the latest.
And that's private insurance?
Private insurance. And if you want the public insurance, it depends. My father, he got a stroke. He was in intensive care for 31 days, and we paid €9 because there was one medicine that wasn't totally covered. So it was covered like 95% of the medicine. So we had to pay euros because it was full cover. And that's it. So probably in the US, I would have paid something like 10,000 a day or something like that. So I had to sell my soul and some kidney.
You're right. It's sad that people could go bankrupt because of healthcare here in the US. So, okay. So for expats, in order to get a visa, you need private healthcare for at least a year. Am I correct?
Yes, for at least a year. Yeah.
Okay. And then after a year, I'm entitled to go on to the public system, which since I have not paid into the public system, I have to pay depending upon how old I am. So if I'm over 60, 65 or 60, can't remember. I think I pay double in Spain. I pay like 170 euro a month, if I'm not mistaken, per person for the public.
Approximately.
For the public. And private could be anything, but private.
Yes, because it depends a lot on your condition. I mean, it's not the same if you are a high risk patient that is.
So what I understand, though, the private, they don't accept pre-existing conditions, which is an issue. Yes, but let's say I have a pre-existing condition with my heart. I can't get private coverage.
I have to pay out of pocket.
Pay out of pocket.
I mean, they won't let you die, but if it is a pre-existing condition, you will have to pay.
Even if I go to a public hospital?
No, not the public hospital.
Okay, so let's say I'm... The public is public. All right. So let's say it's my first year and I don't have public insurance or I don't have public health care yet. I only have private. I have a heart attack. So they rush me to a hospital. Is there public and private hospitals?
No, there are public hospitals and in private hospitals. You have the both of them.
Oh, there's two different kind of hospitals?
Yeah, you have the private one.
Oh.
And the public.
So if I have, they
are very human here. So if you are suffering a heart attack, nobody would even think about taking you to the private hospital. I mean, the first thing we would do is call the ambulance, which is for free. We would call the ambulance and say, there is a man suffering a heart attack in the bar, so please come. It would arrive within 2 minutes. And then they take you to the
how does it go? Can you do that again?
So they would take you to the public hospital, and I don't even know if you would have to pay anything. I mean, I should double check.
I probably not, or something minimal, because healthcare is a right in Spain. It's not a privilege. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a right, not a privilege. Which I think is the rule. I mean, I don't see anything about paying for the thing that you're.
I would think you're right. I don't think if it was that kind of an emergency, I think they would rush me to a public hospital and just do what they have to do. And then I say, okay, how much do I owe you? And they're like, what is that? What? Oh, you don't owe anything. Or $2 for whatever. I don't know. That's what I'm thinking. I don't know if I'm
right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it just seems, I hear like so weird that they would even try to ask for money. It's like you just survived a heart attack. What else do you need? Another heart attack?
Right. From the seeing a bill. Do they have state-of-the-art hospitals in Madrid? I would think so, right?
Do they have what?
Like state-of-the-art hospitals, like high-tech hospitals, really up-to-date.
This is Europe, for sure.
Okay. They wouldn't have to ship me back to the U.S. They could do whatever they maybe, could do in Madrid.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, for some expats, that it could be that even in the LGBT community, that some of them are in their 60s, but they have their children because before they were married to a woman and then they rediscovered themselves when they were in their 50s. It happens. Mm-hmm. If they want to come here with their children or anything, if you want to do university, how much do you think it costs the whole 4 years of your career? Let's say, for example, me, I want to study modern languages, which is four years degree. How much do you think I would pay yearly for that university?
30,000 euro?
1,050.
Oh, wow.
So my whole degree would cost me 4,000.
It's amazing. And here in the US, it's so different that people can't afford to pay back their loans, their student loans. Yeah. So that's another big thing here because they have tremendous amounts of student loans, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. And that's right before they even get a job. They're graduating university and they have this big bill, you know, over their heads.
And we have a very good quality and everything. I just don't see why we should pay more than that.
All right. I like it. I like it a lot. Okay. What do you wish that you don't have in Madrid that you might have had elsewhere? Do you miss anything like that you had in Bolivia or in Japan?
I miss my family and my friends from my whole life that are in Bolivia. So I just came back from Bolivia and it was refreshing for me to see all these family, all these friends that I grew up with. So I think it's a pity I cannot share all these adventures and things and experiences with them. But I think it's part of being an expat, such a shame. We are not Hannah Montana and get the best of both worlds.
Right. How far is Bolivia from Madrid? Like in hours?
Not that far. It's 12 hours away.
Not too bad.
And there's direct flight from Madrid to my city. Direct.
Okay, because from the west coast of the United States to Europe, to like Madrid, it'd probably be with connections and everything, 17 hours.
Oh, but you need connections.
Yeah, where I am. Okay, so we have to connect somewhere. Unless if I was on the East Coast out of New York, where I used to live, I could go probably nonstop to Madrid, but not from where I am in Phoenix. Have to stop somewhere in the country, in the mid or on the East Coast.
Okay, because Madrid is very well connected. So if I want to go Madrid, Brazil, Madrid, Bolivia, Madrid, Peru, Madrid, Chile, direct flights, nonstop flights. So I shouldn't even need to worry about connecting.
Nice. Okay, so do you, besides family, you don't miss anything?
I have everything here. So
You have a point.
I mean, whatever I miss, I'm sure it's here.
It's here. You have a good point, Renato. All right, so let's also, do you know how to obtain a visa?
Sure, what kind?
Okay, so
I have many kind of visa.
So let's talk, since our audience are probably more retirement visa.
Non-lucrative, I guess.
Non-lucrative visa, yes. And can you tell us briefly what the rules are there and how do I get one?
So you need to show that you have money in your bank account, a certain amount of money that is different every year, but it totally depends. I mean, the information is public. You can check it on the internet. But let's say that you are coming with your partner, so maybe you will need to show 30 to 40K for both of you to prove that you can live without depending on the Spanish state, because the only thing that they don't want is you to ask for money to the Spanish state, nothing else. So
you, right, you, you don't want to be a burden.
Yes. So if you come here with your money, you're paying private insurance, and you do you. So it's totally fine. They will give you the visa easily. It's really easy, actually, for the American people to get visa to come to Spain. They just need to do it in the, they just need to follow the right steps to obtain it.
Which is usually the consulate within the United States. That's where you start from.
Yes, yes.
First,
the consulate, you ask what are the requirements, you get all the requirements together, you present your dossier, and then it starts.
So let's say my husband has a pension. I'm going to be collecting Social Security. I'm still working right now, but let's say I stop working and I collect Social Security. So I have that income, plus I have savings, like, you know, retirement savings.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be?
That's more than enough.
Okay.
That's more than an average Spanish person has. So.
Okay. Because my Social Security, again, we've been paying since I was started working when I was 17 years old, and now I am 66. So I've been paying into the Social Security system in the United States all these years. So now when it's time to collect Social Security, I should have a decent amount per month, you know?
Yeah, I mean, take into account that people make $1,200, $1,300 a month in here. So you can, if you can get, let's say, $2,000 per person, you can live a good life in Spain. So if you as a couple make $4,000 to $5,000 monthly, you are going to have a very good life.
Just trying to think in my head. And monthly between both?
So it means 60K per yearly per both.
How much?
60K per
60K
year.
60K per year for both. And yeah. I think if you're married,
for say, having
it's
a very
not
good
double.
Life.
It's not really double, but what they ask
no,
for
I
the
mean,
visa.
I mean, it's not double, but I'm saying like a very high amount, like, you
oh,
are not gonna spend. You are not gonna spend that much. Imagine your rent is 1.5. If it's only the two of you, you can get 1.5 a place. You spend, let's say, $1,000 in restaurants because you're really a foodie and everything. That's 2.5. If you want to travel around Europe once a month, because you're not gonna do it every week, you spend on that month trip other $1,000, like an amazing trip, hotel and flight tickets, because for flight tickets I do travel like every 2 weeks, sometimes every week, and I pay like €50 going and back, Madrid, Rome, Madrid, Paris,
wow.
Madrid, Frankfurt in Germany, Madrid, Lisbon for €30 going and back. So
that's great.
So that quantity of money is so much that you wouldn't even know how to spend it in Spain.
That's great. Yeah, cost of living, it's pretty good. Okay, and I know briefly different, I don't know if you know this, but different parts of Spain have, well, I know you know that each part of Spain is its own autonomous region.
Yes,
and
it's very similar to the federal laws that you have.
So each autonomous region might have their own rules and laws. So when it comes to taxes or wealth tax, some autonomous regions may charge you wealth tax, some autonomous regions may not.
Yes.
Okay. And the same thing goes with inheritance tax. So people have to be aware that different parts of Spain have different rules as far as inheritance tax. So definitely speak to a lawyer about that as well.
Yeah, because there are so many regions that, I mean, it doesn't make any sense that I give any information, because whatever I say is only valid for Madrid nowadays. It may change in 6 months.
Right. And isn't there, I don't know if there's like 32 autonomous regions. I'm not sure how many.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah. All right. So living there for many years in Spain, I should say, are there any cons of living there?
Such as?
How about bureaucracy? We haven't spoken about that. Like Spanish?
I mean, as I speak Spanish, it's not that bad.
That's true. You have an advantage. You have a big advantage.
And when my friends and students, they need my help, I just go with them and translate. Or they just call me when they are with the officer. I just translate. So I cannot really speak for a non-Spanish speaker expat or how they feel about that. But in my case, it's not that difficult. I just go and solve it and everything is easy. But I do realize that they don't speak English. So when I go, a lot of times it takes me twice the time that I'm meant to be there, because I try to be kind and help some other expats that are there, and they try to figure it out what's going on, and they don't know even where to start to fill the documents.
Yeah.
I think in that kind of situation, the language is extremely important.
Yeah, because there's so much bureaucracy. And I hear stories where you can go to the office to get a document and then they say, oh, you need this. So you come back with that, what they asked for. And then they ask you for another document. And that keeps on happening.
Very common.
And frustrating, especially for people in the US. Oh my God, we have no patience for anything.
If you come to Spain, you need to learn patience.
Yes, I know that.
Because you cannot solve things with money. So this is not the US you need. In here, everything works on its own. You just need time.
Yeah, time. Time and patience. So, Renato, in wrapping up, what would you say to our audience if they were thinking on relocating to Madrid?
I would highly recommend them to have a session with specifically a taxes lawyer, because I think it's very important for these American people to know what's going to happen with their money if they move here, because I think it would be a shock if they move here and they realize that 25% of their inheritance is gone or something like that. So I think they should consider every aspect before relocating: the taxes, the health, the language. Try to start learning Spanish. If you can start, since you even consider Spain, like you want to move here in 2 or 3 years, start now. So you are not gonna be shocked when you arrive here. So I think if Spain taught me something, that the longer it takes you to plan, the better the result is. I wouldn't recommend to anybody to come to Madrid just because it's a nice place.
Right.
Spain, because it's sunny. You can get a sunny place in Bali or Cyprus or Greece or whatever. If they choose Spain, they need to know why they are choosing Spain and consider all the options, because there is an amazing lifestyle, very healthy food, prices very affordable for American people, very, very friendly LGBTQ people around. Like, if they're straight, it doesn't matter, nobody cares. Whatever you do is your business, so nobody's going to tell you anything. So those are the good things and the bad things. I mean, at least for me, that's great
advice.
I pay lots of them. And also, if you have your money in the US and you're gonna spend with your car in here, don't move your money, like keep it in the US and you come to Madrid and you spend out of your debit card. As you didn't transfer the money, you are not paying taxes on the money that you have in Spain. So there's like a few things. But you just need to use the logic.
There's a lot of things to think about.
It's not rocket science. There's a lot of things that you can figure out by yourself.
That's great. That's great advice. And you, my friend, are an amazing person. You're 22 years old and accomplished what people dream about accomplishing in a lifetime. So kudos to you. And I hope your dreams and goals come true and you're able to retire at 25, like you plan. I hope your business is successful. And speaking of business, where can our audience find you? Now, you only teach Spanish in Spain, correct? You don't do anything online.
We do online. We have lots of our students that we have never met in person.
Where could our audience find you? What's your website?
It's www.spanish360.es.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So you said Spanish 360?
Spanish360.es.
E-E-S.
E-E-S.
Yeah. Right, España.
Yeah.
Cool. Great. Well, we're going to take a look at your website.
And thank you.
Yeah. I hope our people that are our audience that are intending to move to not only Madrid, but all parts of Spain. I mean, the internet has no borders. So,
oh, sure.
Yeah. Speak to Renata.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And thank you so much for taking the time to speaking to our audience today. It's been very educational. I learned a lot. And we'll speak again.
Sure.
Whenever thank you, you Renata. Need. Thank
you're
you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.